Hello, this is Kathleen, and today, Wednesday, June 10th, I'll be reading to you from the Daily News of Newburyport. Showcasing Science, Molin Students Display Their STEM Projects by Matt Petrie, Newburyport. Students tapped into their interests and showed off what they have learned throughout the year with over 100 unique projects on display during Friday's 14th annual STEM Showcase at Molin Elementary. Every year, it just keeps getting better and better, STEM teacher Kristen Daigle said. It's interest-based, it's volunteer STEM showcase, and it has to really to spark curiosity and engagement with the students so that they feel ownership and excitement over their learning, building self-confidence, and empowerment. STEM, an acronym for science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, has been a part of school curricula for years and seen a recent spike in popularity. The showcase, featuring fourth and fifth graders, was held throughout the day with non-participant students checking it out Friday morning and families coming in from noon to 4 p.m. It was magical, the only word I could say. I think a lot of focus is sometimes on sports achievement, and maybe engineering talent and science talent doesn't always get the spotlight. So this is an opportunity where those students get recognized and celebrated, Daigle said. Students had from February through May to work on their projects. Though the project was optional for fourth and fifth graders, about 70% of students participated, according to Daigle. We had 150 students partake this year, Daigle said. Among the students to participate was fourth grader Sam Blumberg, who shared that his project was inspired by his love for his cat. It was a cat house. It had a fake cat on it, Blumberg said. It also had pictures of cats, and on the board had my real-life cat on a picture. The house included a ramp, multiple floors, and was a couple of feet tall. It was made mostly with cardboard. He is brilliant with visual spatial reasoning, and to put his gift to task doing this, it really hit his wheelhouse and accentuated his skill, Daigle said about Blumberg's project. Asked if any other projects stood out to him, he said one of his fellow students made a fish tank with live fish in it. He said another taught him that gummy bears rot in certain substances. He put like gummy bears in baking soda, vinegar, Blumberg said. Some he put in like apple juice and some of them like rotted. Daigle said she loves that the event has become a tradition at school. It is a nice opportunity when students get to explore what they're interested in and have flexibility to feel empowered and engaged, Daigle said. Woman Rescues Orphaned Baby Raccoons by Caitlin D. Salisbury. Three baby raccoons have a local mother doing weekend chores to thank for a new lease on life after she rescued the trio from a tree in her backyard. A week from last Sunday, Salisbury resident Liz Pease ventured outside her house with her 11-year-old daughter with the sole intention of hanging laundry out to dry. Once outside, however, they heard a strange noise coming from a wooded area behind their house. Despite initially believing it to be a bird, Pease and her daughter soon spotted a baby raccoon emerging from the area. Once she saw the raccoon, Pease was immediately concerned as she realized the raccoon was very small and should not have been out during the day. As the pair watched, the raccoon began climbing a tree on their property and ventured into a hollow spot about 30 feet above the ground where two other tiny raccoons resided. Upon seeing the trio nestled in the hollow of a tree, Pease remembered that she and her husband had seen a raccoon hit by a car the day before and made the connection that the deceased raccoon could be the mother of the babies. Later, it was determined that the dead raccoon had indeed been a lactating female, and the five-week-old babies were still likely nursing from their mother before she died. While watching the raccoons, one of the babies, a boy, fell out of the tree, and Pease, armed with appropriate gloves, was able to catch the raccoon and place him in a carrier. Luckily, she was equipped to handle the situation, having gained animal handling experience during her 11 years running the Merrimack River Feline Rescue Society. After nabbing the small animal, which was unharmed from the fall, Pease began trying to find a rehabber to take the raccoon, which proved more difficult than she expected. "Most of them did get back to me," she said, "about the rehabbers, but most people don't take raccoons. Apparently, it's not terribly common for people to take raccoons. So I was feeling pretty disheartened and like, oh my God, I have a raccoon and I need to find it help." While Pease tended to the raccoon in her family's care, employing advice from a local rehabber, there were attempts made to extricate the raccoon's two siblings from the tree, which were unsuccessful. In the meantime, Pease was finally able to find a rehabber located in central Massachusetts and handed off the baby that fell out of the tree on Monday. On Tuesday, in another attempt to retrieve the remaining raccoons, Pease called a tree trimming company that was able to send a man to retrieve the second baby raccoon, another boy, who subsequently kept it overnight before being transported to the same rehabber as its brother. Only the raccoon's baby sister remained, and Pease became concerned with how long the animal had stayed in the tree. "By this point, we were like, oh my God, is this third one even going to make it?" she said. But luckily, the man working for the tree trimming company went up once more and came face to face with a baby raccoon, eager to get back on the ground and suffering from dehydration. "That one was pretty lethargic because it was super dehydrated, and I was able to get some Pedialyte into it," Pease said. After hydrating the final raccoon, she joined her brothers at the rehabber, where they are all living until they are eventually reintegrated back into the wild. "She has all three of them," Pease said. "They're reunited and doing amazing." While the ordeal was challenging in more ways than one, Pease said she was glad that everyone involved was able to help these sometimes misunderstood animals. "It was very stressful, but I'm one of those people. Like, once an animal needs help, I have to do it. And my daughter is the same way. So between the two of us, there was no way we were not going to make this work," she said. Racketeering Takedown Targets Merrimack Valley Gang Members by Jill Harmansinski, staff writer, Boston. Lawrence and Haverhill members of a violent street gang topped the arrests made under the Racketeer Influenced and Corrupt Organizations Act, or RICO, federal authorities announced Tuesday, saying the Dominican Republic connected Trinitarios gang acts with impunity. U.S. Attorney Leah Foley said the entire local gang's leadership has been taken out. "The Trinitarios acted with a boldness and hubris, which is really quite astounding. The gang's brazenness is what differentiates it from other criminal groups," she said. RICO is the federal law enacted in 1970 that targets ongoing criminal enterprise. Federal, state, and local law enforcement gathered at the Moakley Federal Courthouse in Boston to announce charges against 26 Trinitarios gang leaders, members, and associates for their alleged involvement in 5 murders and 19 attempted murders in Essex County. "The people charged today can best be described as reckless and ruthless," Essex County District Attorney Paul Tucker said in a news conference. "About 250 special agents and task force officers were involved in the investigation that pulled 30 illegal firearms and kilos of illegal drugs out of our neighborhoods, said Ted Dox, special agent in charge of the FBI's office. You should not feel abandoned in your own community. You should not be forced to witness open-air drug dealing, he said. We did not look for a quick fix here. We put in the work. Court documents unsealed Tuesday describing the gang's alleged participation in 5 murders, 19 attempted murders, and efforts to kill witnesses. It was also involved in trafficking of dozens of kilograms of fentanyl, cocaine, and methamphetamine to New Hampshire and Maine, extortion of legitimate businesses with the threat of violence, kidnappings, and robberies, authorities said. Students at Lawrence and Lynn High Schools were targets of extensive recruitment efforts by Trinitarios gang members. The gang allegedly appealed to the recruits, shared Spanish language and culture, Dominican patriotism, and used the appearance of prosperity and brotherhood, Foley said. Gang members were generally initiated into a gang after a period of observation or probation, and were often inducted following a completion of a mission, which were generally significant acts of violence, such as shootings, beatings, or fistfights with rival gang members that were the same age or stature, authorities said. Upon induction, new members were blessed into the organization during a formal ceremony, administered oaths by the state supreme, and awarded ceremonial beaded necklaces. Younger members were allegedly tasked with lesser roles during many violent missions, including standing lookout during shootings, holding or concealing weapons on behalf of full members, and transporting weapons after a shooting, court records indicate. Trinitarios allegedly produced music and music videos featuring Trinitarios pageantry and symbolism, gang members in Trinitarios colors, and clothing holding weapons, cash, and other items. Song lyrics also boasted about Trinitarios' proclivity for violence and the scope of its successful drug distribution, operations, and other money-making criminal endeavors, as warnings and threats to other rival gangs, authorities said. Those charged Tuesday from Lawrence and Haverhill include Yodali Yoro Martinez, James Cabrera, Louis Crispin, Angel Castillo Garcia, Osvaldas Serrano, Yervis Almanzar, Enrique Duran, Abigail Arras, Justine Garcia, Ricky Montilla, Jeremy Felix, Jose Martinez, Jaden Munoz, Giovane Fernandez, Yahir Davila, Yanuel Mejia, Luis Fernandez Lopez, Victor Diaz, Xavier Puello, Jolfrey Cabrera, Richard Pena, Hector Mota, and John Delgado. During the last 2 years, the U.S. Attorney's Office has worked to dismantle the Trinitarios in Massachusetts, charging 56 members who are alleged to have committed or participated in 11 murders and 30 attempted murders since 2017, Foley said. The investigation also resulted in the apprehension of 7 illegal aliens from the United States who have either been deported or in deportation proceedings, authorities said. The charges unsealed Tuesday are part of an investigation that began in 2024 in the aftermath of 4 murders and a series of attempted murders and shootings in Lynn, allegedly committed by the Trinitarios. In February 2025, the investigation led to a federal RICO conspiracy charges against 22 leaders, members, and associates of the Lynn chapter of the Trinitarios and its state leadership. Court documents in that case described the Lynn Trinitarios' alleged participation in 6 murders and 11 attempted murders. Documents unsealed Tuesday describes state convictions of alleged Trinitarios in Essex County Superior Court in connection with four additional murders over the past decade. The Lawrence, Lynn, Boston, and Haverhill chapters of the Trinitarios allegedly dominated their communities by intimidating rival gangs and establishing control over certain neighborhoods. Each chapter allegedly had a cabinet of leaders responsible for recruiting new members, providing discipline to members in violation of Trinitarios directives, and collecting money for a communal account used to support illegal operations and incarcerated Trinitarios members and their families, according to court documents. The Trinitarios also had a written Magna Carta that defines the structure and the rules of the organization, as well as slogans, symbols, colors, and practices, authorities said. Jeff Grimmie, acting special agent in charge of Homeland Security investigations in New England, stressed that local law enforcement has the resources, capabilities, the patience to decimate gang activity. The charge of conspiracy to conduct enterprise affairs through a pattern of racketeering activity carries a sentence of up to life in prison, 5 years of supervised release, and a fine of up to $250,000. The charge of conspiracy to distribute controlled substances carries a sentence of up to 20 years in prison, supervised release for up to a life, and a fine of up to $1 million. Assistant U.S. Attorney Philip Millard of the Organized Crime and Gang Unit is prosecuting the case. Millard is the former Essex County prosecutor. Pre-talk, Saving Water This Summer is Imperative, by Gene Berger. When the well is dry, we know the worth of water, Benjamin Franklin. Essex County is headed for another dry summer. Recently, our area was raised from moderate drought D1 to severe drought D2. There are five levels of drought classified by the U.S. Drought Monitor. Over the past 6 years, the greater Newburyport area has ranged from abnormally dry, D0, to extreme drought, D3, and there appears no end in sight. Recent rainfall was welcome, but a drop in the bucket compared to what we need. At the Tree Commission and Friends of Newburyport Trees, we are increasingly concerned about keeping our new trees watered. The Tree Commission's annual city budget for fiscal 2026 of $28,000 was spent on watering in the summer of 2025, as we added a third year of watering for new trees to help combat the drought situation. Unfortunately, our winter weather did not help the situation. Instead of a freeze-thaw situation, most of the ground and the snow stayed frozen for months, adding little water to the soil. Some of our trees have reacted with a late or poor leafing out, and several have died. Next week, we will be installing new trees around the city, and afterward, tree gator bags will be attached to the trees, planted over the past 2 years. Once a week, the 20-gallon bags will be filled. Any water that neighbors can add to the bags on the weekends would be greatly appreciated. What about trees planted more than 2 years ago? Anyone who notices a tree in distress is welcome to water it. Even 5 gallons a week can make a difference. Homeowners should also be aware of the drought and create new habits to protect our water supply. Install rain barrels to collect rainwater. Limit watering of your gardens to the early hours of the morning, 5 to 7 a.m. Use your irrigation systems sparingly. Watering once a week, every 4 days at most, for an hour in the early morning, teaches your plants, including your lawn grass, to stretch out and look deeper into the soil for water. Wilting is a normal response to temperature. If wilting occurs in the afternoon, wait until the morning. If the plant is still wilting in the morning, it really needs water. Sacrifice your lawn in favor of your trees. Trees cool temperatures around our homes and city streets and clean the air we breathe. A healthy urban forest combats climate change and makes a more beautiful Newburyport. Learn more about the Tree Commission by attending its next meeting on June 11th at 6:30 p.m., Newburyport Public Library Program Room. Support our work at the Friends of Newburyport Trees, P.O. Box 1155, Newburyport, Massachusetts, 01950. Bars to Stay Open Until 3 a.m. by Christian M. Wade. State House Reporter, Boston. When the world's largest sporting event gets underway in the United States this month, Massachusetts' sports bars and restaurant will be ready for the match. A bill signed by Governor Maura Healey on Monday temporarily allows bars and other establishments licensed to serve alcohol to keep pouring for another hour until 3 a.m. and authorizes public consumption of alcohol in locally designated areas through July 31st. Healey said the temporary extension of last call will allow bars and restaurants to take advantage of an influx of visitors to the Bay State as it hosts several World Cup matches and other major events this summer. It will also support our local businesses and regional economies as they see a surge in visitors, she said in a statement. We are grateful to our partners in the legislature for getting this bill across the finish line in time for the World Cup, as well as to the hardworking staff at our bars and restaurants for providing a welcoming and joyful environment for residents and visitors alike. Lawmakers who pushed the changes through over the past week will say it helps communities showcase their downtowns, waterfronts, cultural districts, restaurants, and give small businesses the opportunity to get a piece of the action by staying open later. Statewide, the last call for alcohol has been 2 a.m. We are all on the same team for this one. Massachusetts is giving cities and towns the chance to keep the party going, said State Senator Barry Feingold, Democrat from Andover, co-chairman of the legislature's Committee on Economic Development and Emerging Technologies, and co-sponsor of the legislation. The World Cup is expected to draw large crowds and boost local economies across Massachusetts, with watch parties, community events, and tourism driving spending. Seven matches will be held at Gillette Stadium, renamed Boston Stadium for World Cup play, from June 13th to July 9th. A highly anticipated quarterfinal is scheduled for the last day. Massachusetts is also hosting events to commemorate the 250th anniversary of the signing of the Declaration of Independence and the American Revolution, as well as the Sail Boston Festival in July, which will feature a parade of tall ships around the Boston Harbor. Those events are also expected to draw visitors to the state. A spokesperson for the Massachusetts chapter of Mothers Against Drunk Driving said the group supports the uniform statewide cutoff limit on alcohol sales to prevent bar crawling to establishments with later closing times. This uniform time helps prevent bar hopping to find one last drink at establishments with a later closing time, the organization said in a statement. Far too often, the search for one last drink results in drunk driving. Establishments across the Commonwealth must all have the same last call time. True crime author coming to Jabberwocky, Newburyport. New England true crime author Robert Fitzgibbon will visit Jabberwocky Bookshop on Saturday at 5 p.m. to discuss his newest book, Murder in Salem, Massachusetts. This is the true story of the unsolved murder of 19-year-old Frances Cochran, a Lynn resident who disappeared in a mysterious black vehicle on July 17, 1941. Her body was found 3 days later in Salem. Her murder made national headlines on the eve of World War II. Investigators checked 12,000 cars and interviewed almost 2,000 witnesses. They scrutinized a Peeping Tom men's club. Despite leads that spanned the continent, decades passed and the killer was never caught. As Fitzgibbon reveals, it is also a story shrouded in the Salem factor, the odd and inexplicable coincidences that occur in an area notorious for witchcraft and hauntings. Fitzgibbon is a software professional and North Shore resident. He authored Murder in Rockport, Massachusetts, with Gloucester historian Wayne Stowenney. Jabberwocky Bookshop is at the Tannery, 50 Water Street. The event is free and open to all. For more information, call 978-465-9359 or visit JabberwockyBookshop.com. Area organizations to celebrate Juneteenth. Newburyport. YWCA Greater Newburyport and Amesbury Racial and Social Justice are co-hosting a multi-community Juneteenth celebration, starting in Newburyport and ending in Amesbury. The day starts with a free community swim in the YWCA pool, starting at noon. Families are welcome to stop by and dive in. At 2 p.m., there will be a flag raising ceremony in front of City Hall, with speakers who include Mayor Sean Reardon and local poets and activists. Following the flag raising, there will be performances, presentations from local community organizations, and ice cream sponsored by Biggert's. By 5 p.m., the fun starts to shift to Bear Wolf Brewing in Amesbury, where the evening portion kicks off with a few words from Mayor Cassandra Gove and Claire Killian of ARSJ, before live music from the band Harsh. There will also be a local Black-owned businesses to support and a barbecue dinner, courtesy of Soulfire Barbecue. For more information, visit www.ywcanewburyport.org. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you all have a safe and well day.